Hey everyone, welcome to episode 10. We've officially hit double digits. This week I had the honor of speaking with Jeff Blashill, the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, and Jesse Pletch, professional linesman for the AHL. I want to tell you a quick story about how I met Jeff Blashill because it's pretty funny. I was speaking with Jesse before the interview. I had originally intended on just speaking with Jesse because we were going to talk about the unspoken code of fighting in professional hockey. Jesse got a little squirrely shortly before we started recording. Our studio is on the second floor of a building, and he disappeared to go get some quote-unquote beer from his car. And when I heard him come back in through the main door, I had gone to meet him outside the studio door, and he was coming up the stairs with a guy, some bald guy I didn't recognize, and I figured it was a friend maybe he had met on the street. And they made it about halfway up the stairs, and I had said, hey, dude, what's up? So who are you? And as he picked up his head, Jesse had reached the top of the stairs, and he answered for him and said, "This is Jeff Blashill." And I said, "Awesome. So who are you?" So I'll say in the interview, in full disclosure, I don't watch a ton of sports. I don't memorize stats. I don't know who, you know, important people are. But I pretty much died 1,000 deaths at that moment. And this was 2 minutes before we hit the record button. So that was quite interesting. I had to think on my feet a little bit. But I like to think I could get a good read on people. I'm not blowing smoke here, but my impression of Jeff is that he's a family man. He's a polished dude. He's a humble leader and just a good dude. I drink a beer with anytime. I hope you all enjoy our talk. I decided to keep this one short and record just Jesse and I solo on a different day. So without further ado, here's Jeff Blashill and Jesse Pletch.
You have to be disciplined, and discipline's a lot of things, but it's discipline in your mind, discipline in your actions, discipline in your emotions. And so those are things that we just don't, we absolutely can't bend on those things.
All right. So today I will announce our guest of honor. We have Jeff Blashill on. He's the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings. And we have Mr. Jesse Pletch, lineman, professional, ref.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome, guys.
Big hockey guy, it sounds like you are.
Yeah, yeah. Not at all, not at all. Full disclaimer, I don't watch a ton of hockey. So to have the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings here is pretty wild. And I didn't know he was coming until 2 minutes before.
Thought about that. You couldn't research or anything, but.
Before starting that, no, it's completely cool because I'm ready for a good education. Okay. And this is what I do, man. This is who I am as a person. And, you know, when I meet people out in public, I just love to go deep and, you know, I love to be educated on these things. So excited to talk hockey today.
Yeah, it's good. Good to talk for sure. Jesse and I go a ways back, and he asked me the other day if he said he was hopping on, asked me if I wanted to get on, and I thought it'd be great so I could talk about the moments that I used to yell at him all the time on the ice and stuff like that. We can have some fun with that too. So no, but it was, I said, yeah, for sure. I'll come on for a little bit. And I haven't done very many podcasts, to be honest with you, so it's good to be on.
Okay, cool. You definitely have that accent. Where are you from?
Yeah, you know what? I was born here in Detroit. My dad was a Detroit cop for 10 years. I only lived there for about 2 years, though, and then I moved to Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. So I grew up in Sault Ste. Marie. Yeah, it was a great place to grow up. I was just back there a few weeks ago, and it's about 20 degrees colder than it is here.
Oh, so God, it's, yeah. You know what's weird about going up into the UP? It's like you're going like 50, 60 years in the past.
Yeah. You know? Which sometimes that might be all right, though. Like if this COVID thing all goes wild, I might go back up there and have to show my card to get in.
Might
you
not
know?
Be a bad idea.
I was just up there for 3 days. 4 days and didn't have self-service the whole time. And
It was great. Yeah. You just went off grid.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, it was interesting. Just yesterday, I was talking to somebody about this whole COVID thing. And actually, we were talking about it in context of Hawaii and how Hawaii just put a ban down because they said there's no doubt about it. There's a surge going on and mainland America cannot come to Hawaii. So I got to thinking, I wonder if the UP would do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're Canadians up there, basically. So that's the closest thing you got. The Canadians are smart about it. So
I think you're going to have to get over the bridge. You're going to have to show your UP card. So
yeah.
I got to dust mine off.
I do have family up there, so I feel like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You might get in. I don't know.
Maybe all right. Yeah. So before I get into Sault Ste. Marie, and I do have some questions for you about that, I want to direct this question to Jesse because I told Jesse before beforehand that I was going to ask him what Detroit means to him, and then I'll give you a couple seconds to think about it yourself. But I'm doing this podcast to talk about the people and the businesses and the ideas that are all interwoven that makes up this giant organism that is Detroit. So Jesse, question to you, what does Detroit mean to you?
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet, I guess. It's my green card says I've been here since 08, but I've been here since like 02. So, and it's kind of my second home. Canada's one part, and then Michigan and Detroit, the surrounding areas. It's just all I've known, basically. When I'm back for the summers and the off season, I'll be back here. So it's a good place, and I'm meeting a lot more people that live downtown Detroit now.
Okay.
Like Corktown, and just experiencing that culture down there. It's just good to see that a change is coming. When I was in juniors, I would always say at training camp, I always say Cornwall, Ontario, when they asked where I was from. And then when I went to DCHL, I started saying Detroit. Yeah.
People respond a little differently when you say you're from Detroit.
Yeah, in a good way.
How about you?
Honestly, like as soon as you say that, the first thing I think of is just working class, down-to-earth people. And that's what I love about this area. That's what I love about Michigan in general, but that, you know, certainly specific to Detroit. And that's the, you know, I think you never know what's going to pop in your head when you get asked questions. And I wasn't prepared for that question. I just heard it from you, and that's the first thing that popped into my head. And it's what I believe. Like, I think it still holds true today. I think it was founded by a real work ethic, and I think it still holds true today. And honestly, I get excited even just talking about it because I know that's what this city's about. I've been really, really lucky. Like, in coaching, you can move a lot of different areas, and I've been lucky enough to stay in the Midwest through my career, in Ohio and in Indiana, and then mostly in Michigan, and I'm real proud of that, and I'm real proud to be from Michigan, and real proud to have been born in Detroit and part of this city.
That's a great answer. It's a lot better than your answer, Jesse. But that's that's all right. No, he's natural. You know what I mean?
Practice.
Yeah, I already relate to the guy. He's got a bald head like I do. Yeah, you know what I mean? No, I think that's great because it really is, in my opinion, the essence of Detroit and in the Midwest. You know, and you get it. And I think a lot of people know that without necessarily realizing it, without being able to necessarily articulate it, you know?
There's very little fake here, you know? And I think you go to different parts of the world, and there's a little bit of fake, and it's a little bit of look at me, and you know, and that's probably happened over the course of time in society too, just with with an Instagram type era that we're in. But I don't like fake at all. I like real, and I think the Midwest is real. I think as a people it's real, and I think Detroit's real, and much more so than other parts of the country, in my opinion.
Let's talk hockey though. Talk about NHL, and let's talk about what we're really here to talk about today, which is the code.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that. Yeah, but so I met him. He knew my dad before I met him. I first saw him in the USHL, right? Indiana Ice.
Yeah.
And him and John Cooper was in Green Bay. He's the Tampa Bay Lightning coach now.
Okay.
And my mentor, basically, who I spent 2 years, my first seasons reffing with, ended up coaching assistant coach at Indiana with him. And I don't know, it's just that's how kind of we still, the relationship with him and my dad was kind of established, and then we just kept going. But I followed him up until the American League.
It's pretty cool. He mentioned John Cooper's the head coach of Tampa, and they're still playing right now, and I'm watching, so that part sucks. but you know, it's cool, the relationships that you form. Hockey's a pretty close-knit world. It's amazing how it all becomes interwoven. And as Jesse said, I knew his dad. I worked in a league that his dad was running in college hockey, and then I happened to hire one of his, you know, either best friends or mentors or whatever, and so I got to know Jesse pretty good. So again, I think Jesse's seen the best and worst side of me on the bench, which is always interesting. I do have a fiery Irish temper sometimes that I know when I'm wrong, but yeah.
You don't have to answer this, but I've always wanted to ask you this when I see you and Coop playing each other.
Yeah.
Do you still go in after the game and have a job with them?
Oh yeah, I'll go in after a game and have chat with them, have a quick beer we play golf in the summer together and member guest. We get together and do stuff like that. So it's been easier for him than him for I, because they beat us for a number of times until the last time we played, I actually beat them. So until we play again, I have bragging rights, no matter what happens during this playoffs.
I think that's awesome. Interesting thing that I noticed about hockey too, even just like from an outsider perspective. One, it is very communal. It's communal. It seems small, and everybody just kind of has those connections.
Yeah.
And I mean, with you guys, it sounds like you guys have history. So is it weird for you, Jesse, when you're just like, wow, I'm friends with, you know, the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings?
Not really. It's because I don't know. It's I've had a lot of best friends that played hockey. Like Grant Blakey played for him in Indiana, and it's always been that way. So I don't see it as it's normal.
Just normal, yeah. And I think too, when you become friends, you know that's just your friend, regardless of the whatever position.
I mean, not during the game though. Like you don't even think about it really.
Right.
Like being biased to someone or something. It's mm-hmm. you're there for a job and you do your job. He's gonna yell at me. He's gonna motherfuck me. But at the end of the game, I used to go have a beer with him.
Yeah.
So you as a linesman, when you do get motherfucked by, whoever it may be, you gotta hold your ground, right? You gotta, pretty much either ignore them or you can't argue with them, right?
Yeah, it was different.
How does that interaction work? You're on the ice, he's pretty close, but.
Yeah, it was different when I was starting out. Like, you know who not to yell at, but I'm in the American League for like 11 years now, so I know who to yell at and who not to yell at. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But when, early on, you just take it.
Probably, and enough of the times, like, I feel like the good ones diffuse the situation by just however they do it, they diffuse it. But then at the right time, they might say, shut the F up.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard enough. And usually then you're like, okay, you're right. And so, there's probably a little bit of power struggle back and forth sometimes, and the reality is, like, I think as coaches, most of the time we need to calm down and I think the best refs generally are pretty calm. What I mean?
And that's why I think Justin Lyle was my mentor who ended up coaching. That was a weird setup, but it was a good setup because if he was yelling at me or the referee about something, he'd look down the bench and Lyle would go and he'd stop yelling.
Wow.
So like stuff.
Actually, it was good. It was great. So yeah. So when I got my the job he's talking about, I was an assistant coach in college hockey for 10 years, and I got a head coaching job in junior hockey. It was my first head coaching job, and as he said, I hired an ex ref as my assistant.
Who
it
should
was awesome.
Be in the NHL right now?
Yeah, he was a great linesman, and he did just never quite made the NHL. And so he was kind of looking at what's next in his life, and so. I hired him. I just thought I was driving him to the rink during our tryout camp because he was reffing our tryout camp. This is the weirdest stuff.
Yeah, we went to the bar the night before, bro.
Yeah, I think we went to the bar and we're, whatever. But I was like, man, I really like that guy. Like, he was just a really good dude. And I was like, you know what? I think he could be a really good kind of in between for the players and I and whatnot. So I ended up hiring him. And he was awesome because he helped me so much, especially with the referee.
He played pro, too. He played professionally.
Yeah, but just he knew when to tell me to shut up.
Yeah.
He knew the rules, too, which always helps to actually know what you're arguing about,
Right,
so, yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right.
So that was a good plus. So.
But there is an etiquette. There's a social intelligence there. Like you said, you know who to yell at, who not to. But
and you also know when someone crosses a line.
Yeah.
If someone yells at me and calls me a motherfucker or a cocksucker, that's fine. I can live with that.
Right.
But if they say, I hope you get in a car accident on the way home. Like, that's when it's like, okay.
Whoa.
And which has happened before into junior hockey programs, but
really,
like, I mean, not often, but it happens. And I know guys it's happened to, and they're not the same afterwards.
Really?
I mean, so you they know too, it's an understanding between everyone. You don't cross the line. You don't make it personal. That's the thing too. Once you make it personal, that's when it can fuck you.
As funny as this sounds, when I argue with my wife, I say no swearing. I go, we can argue and you can be as angry as you want at me, right?
That's
but like
part of
leave the names out, leave the swearing out into, married couples that mm-hmm. might be listening. That's probably a good piece of advice.
Well, then it's not personal.
Right.
Then it's not, it's about whatever
it's
the situation
about the topic.
Is. It's not personal. And so,
yeah. I think I pointed my finger at him one time and I did it again.
So you're a pretty level temperament from what I can tell from just being in the same room with you for the last 10 minutes. But you kind of alluded to the fact, or actually said it quite directly, that you have that fiery temper.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I can be, I can certainly be, I think my kids would tell you I can be overwhelming and tense at times in terms of, from a demanding standpoint and probably at times they're like uncle, and I'm sure our players at times feel that way too. And there's certainly a temper that I've learned to, I think, control over the years better than I certainly used to. But I think it's all part of, at the end of the day, I think coaching is like parenting. I mean, it's all to me about setting a standard and just demand that they reach that standard and not slip on that standard. And that's easier said than done. It sounds great on a podcast. It sounds great. And when I'm on coaching clinics and things like that, it's way harder to do because to not slip on those things and to make sure you hold people to that level of accountability, but also get the most out of them and keep their confidence. So that's the coaching to me is nothing more than people management. It's not much different than most profession. It's just people management and trying to get the very most out of your people.
Yeah, I agree with that very much. And I don't know if this is true or not, but from what I understand or what I've heard from other leaders in the past, that you're a good leader isn't necessarily your best friend.
Yeah.
And to hold that line and to set that expectation is very important. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I think it's hard to be, you know, real good friends and then be in charge of that person. I think that's really, really difficult. You know, I think people that try to do that generally that friendship doesn't last because you end up as the leader, you have to say and do things that, you know, at times the people that you're leading don't quite understand, and it just to try to get the, you know, to push them to their very best. And so I don't, you know, at the end of the day for me, I want people I want to make sure that I have a respect to people. I want to make sure that, you know, we have equal respect back and forth. To be there, to be anybody's friends isn't a big deal. You know, I've got lots of friends in life. I don't necessarily need to be friends with the guys that I'm leading, but certainly I want them to believe in what we're trying to get done together. You know, so there is a collaboration effort. It's not a one my way or the higher. There's a collaboration effort, but there's certain things that you don't bend on, and you got to figure out what you bend on, what you don't bend on. But that's just, to me, that's just what leadership is, you know.
That's what assistant coaches are for too, right?
Yeah. No, the different relationships for sure.
But I want to dig into that a little more because you're talking about all of that, but I want to know specifically on a more granular level, what are some of those fundamentals that you espouse as a leader?
Well, I would just say, you know, like, I think it's funny. I've been on all these, you know, during the pause, we got together as groups of coaches and we're on lots of Zoom calls and we talked lots about this stuff. And I think a lot of these things get bannered about, like accountability and these types of verbs. And there's no doubt that those are really important. But how do you implement those things? And so, like, the one thing I said was you got to figure out what are those couple of things you don't bend on. So for me personally, you know, there's work ethic, there's a compete level that you need to try to set a standard that you will not bend on those standards. So you know, your players are going to make mistakes. They're going to do things that they shouldn't do, whether it's you know, undisciplined or those types of things. And you certainly got to make sure that you correct the mistakes and that they're disciplined. But you have to work and you have to compete at you know, in hockey. That's to me. There's those couple bottom line things. You know, we talk about work ethic, compete, execution, and discipline. And I think those are four areas that you have to be great in those areas. I don't care what you're doing in life. Like, I don't care if you're in charge of running a business, if you're in charge of running an organization, you have to work. Compete is different in different businesses, but you have to compete. You have to execute whatever you're doing, and which means pay attention to details, and then you have to be disciplined. And discipline's a lot of things, but it's discipline in your mind, discipline in your actions, you know, discipline in your emotions. And so those are things that we just don't, we absolutely can't bend on those things.
I would imagine you'd have to hold that line pretty tightly too with the shoes that you're stepping into and the history of the Detroit Red Wings and the lineage that's there.
Yeah, no, it's a great, you know, yeah, listen, I grew up a Red Wing fan. I get a chance to coach one of the best sports organizations in the history of sports. But, you know, if you look at the history of the success that we've had with the Red Wings, and we've got great ownership. And as I already said, you know, I have a affinity for the city beyond just coaching here. I'm not a rental coach who just happens to be here for the time being. I really want this city to be great. You know, I would, nothing makes me more proud than when there's lots we can brag about in Detroit. And sometimes it's sports and sometimes it's other things, you know. And so, you know, I feel super lucky in my life that I've had this opportunity. And, you know, the one thing that we talk about as a group every day, and certainly what happened here in the last 4 months and with COVID is really made this ring super true. And that's, There is no, you never walk around with any entitlement that you're owed the things that you have the opportunities to do in your life. Like, you better try to earn those things. And so, you know, we get a chance to work in the NHL, and every day you get a chance to work in the National Hockey League is a special, special day. And you better try to make sure that you're trying to earn that opportunity every day, and you're not entitled to that opportunity. And so we just keep, we'll just keep enjoying it and doing the very best we can.
Sure. So I know that you do a lot of media, and I know that we're just having a fun conversation here, but with everything you just said, do you have fear?
I think everybody does, whether they admit it or they don't admit it. I think everybody's probably makeup is different too, and some can overcome their fears easier than others. But I don't think there's anybody that doesn't have any fear. It's how you manage that fear, you know, and it's basically, you know, perspective's really important to that. I think just training yourself to learn, you know, I think when you're in decision-making process, if you get to a point where you're afraid to make a decision, then you're in trouble. You know, you got to really, really work, and this is not easy, but you got to really, really work to make the best decision you can with the information you have available, and then see how it goes, and not be afraid to look at it and say, okay, I made a bad decision, we got to go here, you know, and that's just the reality of it. Yeah, like, own it, you know, and that's no different than a lot of people in a lot of different situations. Like, you just have to be able to, you know, somebody said this to me once, it's way better to make a firm decision than to waffle on your decisions, even if that firm decision is a wrong decision, you know. Wow. And there's reality to that. You know, you make the decision with the best information you have, and then you can move on and you can adjust. And I think that's what you have to learn to do in positions where you're making a lot of decisions in positions of leadership.
And I would say that's a hard thing to do for somebody to make that decision with conviction, mm-hmm. and ownership, because I would say probably most leaders or head coaches and I have really no idea what I'm talking about in terms of experience here, but I would imagine that people would want to stay in that comfortable waffle region, right? Because maybe they want to have everybody like them, right? Or maybe they want the opportunity to go back on their decision and say, well, you know, I thought it was kind of this way, so, you know, I got it wrong, but it's okay.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the biggest thing. I think the biggest thing is to be able to look in the mirror and own it and say when you screwed up and when you didn't, and to look at other people and do that and not be afraid to admit mistakes. And that's just the reality of it. Actually, it's funny. Yeah, you're chuckling. That's reffing. That. You know, that's what lines being a linesman is, and that's what a ref is. I mean, those guys live in that microcosm, like, to a level way beyond us, because, you know, like, it's every little call. And you have to be you'd agree, like, if you get gripped with fear,
then it's like Quick saying, once you make a bad decision, you just keep snowballing, you keep making bad decisions.
Wow.
It's just,
that's a good point.
It's a weird headspace to be in, especially when you're on the ice with fucking him yelling at you.
That's a good point, though, because you have all this pressure as a coach, but you have this pressure to make a decision that can completely affect the outcome of the game.
Yeah, and if I blow the whistle, like, that's, and I know I fucked up, like, that's the worst feeling in the world.
And you have, clearly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I think it's safe to say we've all made mistakes in our area of expertise.
Not many times, though. Not many times.
Yeah. Well, guys, I got to go.
Thank you. Yeah, I was just going to ask if you...
This is awesome.
Split. Yeah, I appreciate it. It was fun.
Questions have started bubbling up, man. So it's too bad you have to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was a great honor, and thank you, and... That's all I got.
Good luck with everything. Final message? Yeah, I want to listen and hear what he has to say later.
Wait. We're not going to let him go just yet. Yeah. So
I don't want to get more ammo for the ice.
No, it's all right. This is the question I'm going to ask Jesse at the very end. But I ask all my guests this, and it's completely unrelated to the topic that we're talking about. But I like to talk about music, right?
Fuck, that's perfect, because you look exactly like Gore Downie. Have you ever noticed that?
I've not.
Come on, man.
I don't even know who that is.
It's the lead singer of Tragically Hip.
Who's passed?
Yeah.
All right.
You've never got
so
that.
So here's
before?
My question.
No.
Easy,
I'm
Jesse.
I'm sorry. Easy. Sorry, that just sparked that. I'll ask it after.
All right. If you were to get in the car, go on a road trip, what music would you turn on? Either artist, album, playlist. And the reason I ask it, and I'm going to go on a little bit to give you a couple moments to think, is that I think that music unites us all. It connects us. And I think in a time that we're dealing with now, with all this division and all this fighting and rioting, we need unity more than ever. Mm-hmm. So what would that artist or music be for you?
First off, I love music. I think music has an unbelievable way of inspiring us, of making our lives better, of just enjoying life way more. So I love music. I was just talking about this with some friends of mine. My youngest actually is trying to, if he loves one thing in life, he's 10 years old, he loves music the most. He loves playing, he's learning how to play the guitar and sing. He sings nonstop. And his is Elvis, the Beatles, AC/DC, Elton John. I mean, it's every old, at 10 years old, it's unbelievable. Yeah, he knows every Beatles, it's crazy. For me, when I get in my car, like if I had to give you a few artists, Spike I would say Eric Church, Billy Joel, Bob Seger. Those would be three I'd give you. And honestly, they're obviously a little different. I was never a country guy until about 5 years ago, and now I actually listen to The Highway every day.
Isn't that funny how that kind of grows?
It's unbelievable. Yeah, I love Eric Church.
Okay.
I think he's super talented, and I think Billy Joel's super talented, and Bob Seger, same. You know, I got to see Bob Seger at age like 76 in concert in Grand Rapids or whatever it was. It was amazing how, you know, just the energy level that he had. My wedding song's an interesting one, Jess. You asked what my wedding song was. Yeah, my wife and I, neither one of us could even pick out our wedding song.
You couldn't?
No, it's unbelievable. Like we went through all this stuff and we picked some obscure Sting song that we still can't figure out what it was, honest to God. So you know, and then my kids will tell you that I don't remember any lyrics at all. Like I screw up lyrics as much as anybody in the world. I love music. I sing all the time and I screw up the lyrics. And then if we went back, it would be a Billy Joel song, and I believe it's The Way.
Way You Look Tonight?
No. Do I have my phone on me? I need to know this song for sure. No,
yeah, look
I got
it,
it right
but
here.
But I'll tell you what, I do love me some Night Moves.
No, oh yeah.
That's an amazing song.
Yeah, I could talk about music. Not like the problem is
hey,
I
we
never,
got a lot more beer. You don't have to go.
Yeah. The problem is I never remember the names of songs, bands. I never remember lyrics.
You fuck the lineups all the time up in Grand Rapids.
I never ever in junior one time I messed the lineup up.
Ben Schneider.
Yeah, Jeff, it is a bench. I appreciate the fact that you're pretty relaxed because Jesse over here is trucker mouth, man.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Yeah, well, it's a little bit learned.
You live in a different strata. Yeah, almost, yeah, yeah. But I love it that. You're
All right, so if we could go back, our wedding song would be "To Make You Feel My Love" by Billy Joel.
Okay.
That's what our wedding song would be. So I hope my wife doesn't mind sharing that.
I don't think I've ever heard it.
Everybody
I don't think I've ever heard it, but I'm gonna listen.
Oh, it's unreal. It's awesome. It's an awesome song. Listen to it.
To make you feel mine.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable song.
Okay. Good covers of it.
Karaoke?
Yeah, yeah. Before he starts karaoke, and I'm
He's
out.
Like, before I go, see you. Drop the mic. I'm out.
Exactly.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks,
Jeff Lashel. Awesome. Thank you so much.